CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And Fire It Up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
Believe. On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
That's right. Welcome back to Fire It Up with CJ on New Sky Radio, New Horizons, No Boundaries. And today we are talking with Professor Kenneth Worthy about his new book, Invisible Nature. Now, if you're wanting to get in touch with CJ, we can go to the website, fireitupwithcj.com, as well as Fire It Up with CJ on Facebook. So, CJ, let's get back to it.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. So I was thinking about an example that Ken writes about in his book, Invisible Nature, and he talks about, I think the character is called Ted, and he's a financial analyst that works in the logging industry. And Ted's life is, I could relate to it. And this is very much when I was a financial analyst. I was working at General Electric, and Ted's life was almost parallel to mine. I would get into my little heated car, drive down the highway, like in Boston. It's not so anonymous, because when you're driving around in Boston, it's like a cockfight. So it wasn't so anonymous as Ted's experience. But I was driving down the highway, then I would go over to the manufacturing plant that we made aircraft instruments. In Ted's case, he was working for a logging company. And then I would sit down and my computer, and I'd crank out spreadsheet after spreadsheet with the sole purpose of maximizing profits for General Electric. Now, in this case, the hypothetical character that you have, Ted, or maybe he's a real guy, sits down and cranks out spreadsheets on what forest to fell. You know, it's just so incredible that, and I think the point that you're making and that you beautifully made during the story of Ted, or it could have been my life, was how disconnected Ted was to the actual decisions that he was actually making. He was cranking out these spreadsheets to figure out which trees he was going to plow down. And I think that oftentimes, you know, we're sitting there in our computers cranking out spreadsheets, writing reports without really, as you said, being conscious of the consequences of our actual actions. In my case, I was working for General Electric, and about, I think probably at that time, 30% of our products were made for defense and, you know, creating airplanes that killed people. But I didn't really think about it too much. So, you know, I think that it goes to, I think, a lot of the things that you talk about in your book, Ken, about invisible nature and how we're so disassociated. So I wanted to spend this segment, and you do such a beautiful job of explaining the cultural values that we have and our societal values and you know, how does this happen? I mean, are Ted and I just messed up, or because I think a lot of other people are like Ted and me, driving around in our cars and being kind of disconnected. What do you think are the values and beliefs in this culture in the West that really feed into this kind of disassociated life?
Well, thanks for bringing up. Oh, that's Joe, by the way.
Joe, Ted, CJ.
Yeah,
we're all the same.
The same. It's all of us, really. And that was that was my point in designing this guide, to sort of capture a typical life. And so, yeah, and his life kind of exemplifies the fact that we're not just in our personal lives, but in work lives, we're disconnected, you know, from the consequences of our actions. And the of ideas and thinking, in particular in Western philosophy, about that really undergird the whole our whole disconnection from nature and from our consequences and all the fractious kind of structure of modern life.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes out of, in particular, a lot of it in ancient Greece. And people forget, you know, people go to school and they read Plato or whatever, Aristotle, Socrates, and they probably, a lot of them are resentful to having to read that, but they forget that, you know, those guys really set the tone for Western society.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they absolutely changed everything completely, but they've been extremely influential thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they were thinking in a particular kind of context that was really fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
And for certain reasons that I explain in the book, they came up with ideas about the way the world works and the way the world is, even the physical world, that are really chopped up and disconnected. So Plato, for instance, we kind of take this for granted, and it's just embedded in Christianity. Plato proposed the idea that the body and the mind are two separate things, and that the mind exists independently of the body. A lot of people know that, but they don't realize that not only did he separate them, but he elevated the mind over everything else and basically said that the body is a trap or a prison, that the mind and should, or the philosopher should seek to liberate his mind from his body. Because the body is in this really messy, complex world that's just too difficult to know, because it's always changing and it's imperfect. And he came up with the forms of the ideas, which are these mental constructions that are perfect. And he said that they're more perfect and more valuable and more real than the body and everything else associated with it, including all of physical nature. So here you have a very influential philosopher in Western history basically saying that all of physical nature is a very messy and complicated thing, and we should seek to get away from it. And that has really deep repercussions in our thinking and in our actual experiences.
Right, it's a fragmentation that you're talking about, which is that even as a human being, I have a mind, a body, and a spirit. And now what Plato says is throw away everything else but the mind. So then even in my own being, I'm fragmented, right? Because I actually don't have – so already I have a fragmented perspective, because I'm only looking at things from the perspective of the mind and nothing else. So that fragments me. And, in fact, the very thing that could allow me to orient myself with nature is my body and my senses, which he's saying don't even think about those things, because that's just – animalistic, probably. I don't know what he would think, but probably. So even the thing that would allow me to connect with nature is told as bad. Is that interesting?
That's exactly right. He saw the senses, which are what connects us to nature, as really suspect. And he said the philosopher, who is the ideal person for him, the philosopher should really not trust any information, any knowledge that he gets from the senses. And he should really just deprecate the senses. Just say that, you know, all of your vision and your sight, your hearing, taste, all of your senses are giving you information that's just corrupting you. And so it's not a very nature-oriented, to put it mildly. Basically, Plato was saying we have to liberate ourselves from physical nature, get beyond physical nature, and exist beyond it in an eternal realm. And he proposed the idea, it's very influential in the Western world, that the mind exists before and during and after the body exists. And so the mind can then go to heaven or hell. And it's kind of independent of the body. Entirely independent of the body.
Right. So these thoughts these ancient Greek thoughts still are part of our thinking too, where we are fragmented from, I think, you know, as I was describing in the first segment, you know, I was actually at Microsoft or at GE in this kind of mind-oriented, you know, I'm writing spreadsheets and I'm talking about concepts and, you know, ideas and getting completely not in tune with nature or anything else around me, which I can definitely see that the origins of these thoughts were kind of part of it, right? And what's even more absurd or wonderful, it's both, right? The absurd thing is that I feel like I can control nature, right? Like I'm going to write a spreadsheet that will tell me what things what resources should be optimized for and not, right? So it's kind of an absurd thing, but then at the same time, it's a beautiful thing, because some of these things, you know, as I was reading through your book, I thought, well, this is a really tricky thing, because on one hand, this Western thought enables these heart medicines and all these wonderful discoveries in science to be discovered. But on the other hand, it has this fractured, destructive aspect to it, too, and with respect to the environment. It's a tricky thing.
it's a very tricky thing because and whenever you start to analyze and criticize Western culture and Western science, you have that response, all of the accomplishments of Western science. And I understand that there are a lot of things that I depend on and enjoy. But if we have an entire system that's built on destroying the very sustenance of our existence, then that's a problem. And I think that's what we have. And maybe it's happening too slow for some people to notice, but I think it's really happening. But because if you get a good picture of what's happening with the environment, it's very scary, actually.
Okay, so we're going to talk more about this. We have Ken Worthy here talking about his book, Invisible Nature, and we're going to be talking about other cultural values in the next segment and how they compare to kind of our Western origins. We'll be right back.